Good morning. I'm Lauren Stockman. This is the use of syndromic surveillance to identify areas at high risk for HCV and HIV transmission through injection drug use. New reports of hepatitis C virus infection among young people aged 15 to 29 years in Wisconsin have doubled in the past 5 years. This increase is due to a rise in recent injection drug use and sharing syringes and equipment used to inject drugs. Surveillance for indicators for injection drug use may help identify areas of the state that are at increased risk for hepatitis C as well as HIV transmission. BioSense is a health information system hosted by CDC, to which hospitals, emergency departments, and clinics can send information on patient visits. 80% of Wisconsin hospitals transmit data to the BioSense system on a daily basis. These data include patient chief complaint, and they are recorded by the medical staff at the time of visit. And this field can be searched using words or health syndromes and act as syndromic surveillance to monitor health events. The purpose of this study was to use BioSense to identify injection drug use activity represented by medical visits, and therefore to find areas of the state at increased risk for an hepatitis C or an HIV outbreak. If an algorithm can find increases in injection drug use in real time, we figure the data may be used to target hepatitis C and overdose prevention. So we chose terms that we thought would represent injection drug use among people who visited the emergency department. We entered these terms, we used inclusion and exclusion terms listed here into the BioSense query interface. The terms we included were IV drug, injection drug, heroin, and a misspelling of heroin, injected meth, injected opana. And then the terms we excluded that had those words were denies injection, denies IV drug, denies IDU, no IV drug, no injection, and no IDU. We queried emergency department visits during the most recent 24 months. We included facilities that reported consistently throughout these 24 months. Then we validated the results of the query by comparing the trend in visits identified by the BioSense query to the trend in visits related to heroin. And we identified these using the heroin-specific ICD-9 codes. Those were 965.01 and the E code E850.0. And we looked for that data in the Wisconsin ED data set. So during the 24-month period, almost 5,000 visits in BioSense included one of these injection drug use terms. 61% of the visits were among men and 39% among women. About half the visits were among that age group, 15 to 29 years. Of those terms, we chose to identify injection drug use. Heroin was the most common. 96% of the visits included the word heroin. We used the chief complaint text of all of these visits to categorize the nature of the visit. So 57% of the visits were for acute overdose poisoning, 27% were for requests for detox or medical clearance, for example, to get admitted into a substance abuse program. And this is a line graph that shows injection drug use identified in BioSense in red, and it generally correlated with the ED visits coded as heroin overdose, shown in blue. The correlation coefficient was 0.7, and this validates the BioSense query. Importantly, the data from BioSense was available 8 months before the Wisconsin ED data set was released. The dots on this map, if you can see them, represent ED facilities that reported to BioSense throughout the 24-month period. And this shows the counties with an increase that had more emergency department visits with heroin injection drug use in the most recent 6 months compared to the number they had in the previous year. A few limitations: we only use the most consistently reporting facilities in the analysis, and the goal for syndromic surveillance is to identify a signal, so we know we did not identify all visits related to injection drug use. So these findings suggest that the BioSense data system can be used to monitor injection drug use activity And we hope to use this data to identify counties that are at risk for hepatitis C and implement or strengthen our programs for prevention in those counties. Thank you.
So now we'll have a quick question and answer session. If you want to ask any questions, if you could come up to the mic in the middle of the room.
And for presenters who've been asked a question, if you just come up here, I can hand you the mic so you don't have to climb up onto the stage here. So I'll start. I want to just, first of all, congratulate Danica on three presentations. I was really excited to see your reverse estimate for national cases based on local data, because I think that's a really exciting way to look at it. It looks really different from what we're seeing nationally, and that certainly mirrors what we're seeing in Massachusetts, and I feel like I want to take this methodology and use it on our data and encourage other states and jurisdictions to do the same. I think it's really a great idea. I wanted to ask you a question also about with your first presentation, with the look at pregnant moms with Hep C and the testing for their babies. One of the things that we've seen a lot is around really poor practice with testing of the babies and babies being tested at, you know, 1 or 2 months just for antibody. And I was wondering if you could comment any on if you saw any similar patterns with your data.
Yeah, so we definitely have seen a lot of inappropriate testing. That's what we would call it. Antibodies done way too early, even at less than 1 month of age, and the doctor feels that's enough. We saw a lot of that with all of these cases that we considered to be appropriately tested. It was past that point. They were past the 18-month mark when an antibody test was appropriate. But that is certainly something that we really do want to work on locally, and you know, as nationally, everybody is on board, and we're having these discussions. Hopefully, testing guidelines can become more robust and transparent for providers, because it seems like there's a lot of mixed messaging that's going out there, and providers may think antibody needs to be done later, but RNA is fine to be done at 1 month, and that information I feel like is a little muddied. So we are definitely seeing that as well.
You can stay up there because I'm going to ask you a question. Thanks for all your presentations. I have a question on the perinatal. I'm just wondering if you've found any solutions to the challenge of ensuring that pediatricians get information from, I guess, the birth record or the prenatal record. I don't think this problem is unique to hepatitis. We're facing it right now with Zika virus. So I'm eager to have solutions to that problem. I noticed that you talked about, I think, asking the mom to share her status with the pediatrician. So I'm looking for if you have any lessons learned or solutions that you're implementing, and if that request for consent was just a best practice or a legal issue, because I know that we share other, you know, birth record information with pediatricians all the time, you know, C-section versus vaginal birth, that kind of thing. Thanks.
In terms of solutions, I think that what we've experienced with all of the issues has been that they are very varied. It depends on the providers, and if an infant is receiving care in the same electronic health record as mom was receiving her prenatal care, it may be more likely to transfer over. But as of now, there's no universal, you know, sheet that talks about HIV and Hep B and Hep C and syphilis and what is it, group A strep, group B strep. So we haven't found a solution to that yet. If anybody else has one, please. I mean, this is something we definitely think is important, because that communication definitely needs to happen. And your second question.
It was just about the consenting.
Oh, consent. So we asked consent. At least in our jurisdiction, it's the same for hepatitis B. We can indicate an exposure has happened, but to say mom is hep C positive, we at least didn't want to have to jump through the legal hoops if anybody got angry about it. Everybody consented. Okay. I think we had one mom who didn't want to consent. And in that situation, we told pediatrician that there was an exposure but didn't indicate how it had happened.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a question for Lauren with the BioSense. My name is Jamal Russell. I'm from Maryland. We also do use syndromic surveillance to search for similar things like drug overdose, things like that. But what our problems are with our query, and my question specific to your query terms, is that we cast a wider net by using just a straight overdose query. We don't get a lot of specific where they say, you know, injected this or, you know, it was likely heroin or, like, you know, it was just usually just generically overdose. And I was wondering, did you exclude that because it was kind of a broad collection and you want to kind of narrow the focus? Because I just from my experience, just overdoses just usually just put in there, and so there could be just a larger group of people that probably you could have potentially missed.
Sure. Thanks for the question. Is it can hear me? So we were focused on injection drug use specifically for the risk factor of sharing that equipment because it's most directly related to Hep C and HIV transmission. We do know that many people that do inject drugs have started using prescription opioids first. However, we thought that would be more of a wider net of people that might not be targeted, the best target group for the syringe exchange programs. So in our program, we do have a larger effort looking at an overdose query as well. So this one was purposely specific to injection drug use. Thank you.
So I had a question for Jeff Easel about the testing of all of the potentially exposed patients. And we've had some similar situations in Massachusetts where hospitals have had to do outreach to get people in. And it was surprising to see that they were only able to get 51%, I think it was, of the patients in for testing. And I didn't know if you knew anything about the who did not get tested.
So who did not get tested, that's difficult to describe. However, the facilities involved really made some extra efforts to get out there and identify these people and get a hold of them. They hired an outside company which called these people daily to get them in. They sent out letters. They also sent them out certified so that they had to have signatures for them. So the ones that were notified, some may not have seen the risk. We do know that some media stories went out that sort of downplayed the situation a little bit, saying, oh, not many people have came back tested positive through this investigation so far. So that may be the result of that, why we had around 51%. Mm-hmm. But describing that population, unfortunately, I can't.
I also have a question for you. So I might have missed this, but I was just wondering how you identified the first patient, patient zero. Was it through the blood bank? Did they call you? And then do you guys do any sort of collaborations with blood banks in Utah? Because I know we've also had similar things in California, and it's kind of sparked that conversation of, you know, how can we utilize these facilities in finding serial conversions?
Great question. So our acute case ascertainment goes two ways. We look at symptomatic individuals, and asymptomatic we find through donation. So all blood donors and component donors, we follow up on them, every single one, to find a documented seroconversion. So we have an agreement with some of the major donor facilities that everyone, every case that they report to us, they supply the number of previous donations and their last negative. So we can identify that seroconversion, then we follow up with a full investigation at the local health department level. Yeah, it's a good tool.
Yeah. And then I had another question for Danica. So I know that you contacted mothers. So I was just wondering where you got the contact information from. I mean, your data source might be very much more robust than what we have, but I was just wondering where's the best place to find that information for you.
So this was the complication with contacting women at 18 months of their of age of the children, because many of the women had been tested, but it may have been pre-birth. It may have been in prenatal care or even before that. So the contact information we had in the hepatitis registry was older, and then the birth records was over 18 months old. So we had both of those sources for contact information, and when neither of those worked, we utilized the immunizations registry, where in theory all of these kids would be in-house if they are in care and getting vaccines in the city. So we saw if there was any updated information there, and then if that didn't work, we used Accurint or LexisNexis to try to find something newer. And for some of them, I mean, they probably just moved outside of the city, honestly, and that's why with our program going forward, we're going to try to do outreach, as soon as we have that contact information so that we can take advantage of initiating that discussion when we can.
And Danica, before you leave, it's so many presentations. So one of the things that you mentioned was that you investigate people over the age of 75 as suspect acute cases, and we do the same for people who are over 70 years of age. We've had no luck identifying acute cases that way, and I was wondering if you have or if you've heard of that being successful in other jurisdictions, just because that seems like a practice that a number of us have taken on, and I'm not sure if it's productive.
So we have found, I think, three cases, acute cases, who we targeted based off of the older age. I would say, and this is not analytically sound, I haven't proven this, but like as compared to youth cases, the payoff is much smaller. Younger cases are more likely to be acute, we found, if we're reaching out. So for every two we contact, one is probably acute. The older individuals, I would say it's much greater than that. I mean, it would be like one for every 20 or something like that. So, and again, I haven't looked at that specifically, but we have definitely found cases that way, but just far fewer.
Okay, any other questions?